judge denied bond for a man accused of murdering a UGA law student 23 years ago. You see, the GBI announced investigators, they arrested and charged Edric Faust. Police said that he killed Tara Baker. Again, this was January of 2001, and then set her apartment on fire to try to cover up the crime.
Now, Justin Farmer there, Justin Farmer, the anchor desk, Channel 2 Action News. I was right, well, it was January of 2001, and the apartment that's on Lexington, Athens East Side, was burned in an apparent effort to conceal the crime. Did conceal the crime, or at least the criminal, for, yeah, more than two decades. But the stunning news Thursday of last week of an arrest in this case. Cameron Jay with us now. Cameron Jay, Classic City Crime Podcast. Cameron Jay, how'd you find out about this?
Well, I found out in early afternoon on Thursday, just before the news was going to break, got a call from someone close to the investigation letting me know that an arrest had been made and to be watching the news.
And you have been close to the family in the podcast, and we'll talk at length about the podcast and the work you've done spotlighting this case. But you've been close to the family. You've spoken with the family a couple of three times since.
Yes, they were obviously, as you can imagine, one of my first calls. Spoke with all of her siblings as well as her mother. And what I can say about that conversation is it was quite an emotional one, full of a roller coaster of emotions from shock to sadness to the welcomed news that someone would be held accountable 23 years later. But you can imagine that with that breaking news comes the harsh reality that new truths and the real truth will become very evident to the Baker family in the coming days.
I don't know to what extent you were involved in the statement, but they did put out a statement last week, and you made it available to me, and folks can go to our website, WGAUradio.com, and read it. Unanswered questions and new grief, I think, was the phrase they used in talking about where they are right now with this. We'll learn more. You're telling me something I didn't know. I knew that we've been waiting for a GBI news conference, thought it might come Friday, didn't, thought it might come over the weekend, did not. Now you're telling me this afternoon?
This afternoon at 2:30, as I understand it.
At GBI headquarters in Atlanta,
yes.
A news conference. And we will, I don't know how much more we'll learn. I hope we learn something about what may have led to this. At this moment, I don't know anything. I don't know. You may know a little more than I do. I don't know that anybody knows much about how they came to identify this guy as the person they've been looking for all these years.
Well, I think the important thing here is, yes, the details about that will come forward as the criminal justice system now does its job 23 years later. I think when you have a case that is 23 years old, being quiet about what you have and what you're looking at as it relates to moving toward adjudicating the case in a court of law is extremely important. So I recognize the gravity of that as far as it relates to law enforcement. I mean, really just want to say this morning on your show what gratitude I have, the family I know has, to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the Athens-Clarke County Police Chief and his team, as well as this entire community who rallied behind them over the last few years specifically to really shake the trees again, shed new light, and ultimately get a conversation started that I believe all culminated right into this quite shocking news we heard last
week. Again,
Cameron
Jay, Classic City Crime Podcast. You mentioned the Athens-Clarke County Police Department. Jerry Salters is the chief. Now, I don't think I knew this. Perhaps you had picked up on this in your reporting on your podcast there. He's on the scene.
Correct.
I think it was a police captain maybe at that time, those 23 years ago. He's on the scene.
Very early in his career, yes. And what I can tell you is that when I first sat down with Chief Salters, when he assumed the role of our police chief, he looked me in the eye and told me that he wanted to see this case solved. And he also looked at me and said that he believed that partnerships were the way that we were going to do that. And I believe that the partnerships that, you know, led to this are extremely important to recognize. You had a family that for 23 years never gave up. You had a new police chief come in and say, we're going to use all tools and resources necessary to get the job done. You had the GBI with the Coleman Baker Act create that cold case unit. And then you had investigators who continued looking at this case over and over again. So I think what we learn here is that when we do take a moment and we do look back at these cases that are 10, 20, 30 years old with the advancements in technology that we have and the resources we now have available, that there is hope for victims' families across the country.
On a certain level, and again, okay, innocent till proven guilty, alleged and all the rest of it. We'll say that about Edric Faust, 48 years old. Means he'd have been very young at the time, as of course was the victim here, Sarah Baker, and we don't know the circumstances as how they came to be in that same place, in that apartment together that evening when he allegedly killed her. But I'm struck by what happened in the intervening years. We're reading over the weekend quite the extensive rap sheet for this guy. The first I got was, okay, some knucklehead stuff, driving without a license, a DUI, okay. But now we're finding out some violent crimes, some gang-related stuff, drugs, and the rest of it. I'm not asking you to do anything with this, just an observation here. But I mean, if I'm trying to get away with murder, which he literally was, if I'm trying to get away with murder, and I think most folks would like to think this way, I want to live the cleanest life possible. He's out there doing all, allegedly again, doing all these things that at some point, I'm thinking, however it came to pass, almost made it inevitable he's going to get tagged with this.
Well, what I can say is, in true transparency, Tim, I have not thought much about him other than reading his name. I've taken some time to really, you know, support Tara's family and really pause and remember her life and legacy over the past few days in light of all of this. But what I can say is, when you look at a rap sheet that long, and you really have to think about the psychology of the person involved and what
that
might
mean to them. Yeah, I'm thinking rationally, and he's not.
Correct. Correct. So I think a lot of that will come, and I'll leave that to the experts out there to decipher over the next few months. But what I can say is, it certainly seems that evil encountered the greatest of good on January 19th of 2001. And that's something that I think the why might be something we never get. But I hope, at least for the family, that there might be an answer to that
question. Well, you said you're not giving him much thought, focusing instead on the victim and the victim's family. Let me ask the question this way. In all the work that you've done on this case, and you've been on, when did you start digging into Tara Baker?
Yeah, so February of 2020. So
3-4 years now. You've been digging into this. Did this name ever pop up anywhere in any of your reporting?
Well, I believe it never popped up on anyone's radar. Time will tell how that name is interwoven with the work that the police department and myself have done over the last 23 years. And I'm looking forward to hearing those details as they come out. But the ultimate thing here is, whether it's the police department or my podcast, no one ever wanted to be right. We just wanted the truth. And I think that you get the truth when you shake the trees, when you get people to look back, when you bring awareness to a case, when you remember a victim's life in the public domain. I think it inspires in a lot of people's hearts a piece of advocacy, which I believe that advocacy is exactly why we are today where we are.
The Classic City Crime Podcast, who brought so much, Cameron Jay, who brought so much in this, I think Scott Turner with Eternal Vigilance Actions, and of course the Baker family, and so many people, GBI and ACCPD, that have been involved to get us to this moment.
State Rep Houston Gaines, with whom we spoke last Friday, the news of last Thursday, the arrest in this cold case homicide, the Tara Baker murder of 2001, giving credit, Representative Gaines, as how many other people have, Cameron Jay and his Classic City Crime Podcast. I want to step back just a moment, Cameron Jay, and I'm going to say this, and I think you would echo, you speak for yourself. Police were working this case anyway. The GBI didn't. You know what? There's this podcast out there. We better get busy. I mean, they were working this case anyway. That said, you are getting a lot of attention. Your podcast has been mega successful. You're going to be modest and not going to take credit for this. But you've mentioned a couple of times already, just keeping the spotlight on. And maybe when others weren't, you were.
Yeah, so here's what I believed. I believed when we started this podcast that by telling victims...
Which you did in
2020 is when we started it. By telling victims' stories, by giving their family, friends, colleagues, classmates, and this community a platform to tell their truths, and that by working with law enforcement that we might see justice come forward. And I know we're probably going to move into talking about the Coleman Baker Act.
Yeah, Houston Gaines, Representative Gaines, that's why we had him on Friday. He, of course, his name attached to it, or in terms of sponsoring that particular piece of legislation. By the way, Coleman, quickly, that just a quick recap on that.
Yeah, Coleman was murdered in the 90s down in South Georgia. Around the time we started our push for something like the Coleman Baker Act, they kind of started the same thing. So I made a call to South Georgia and said, hey, two families looking to do the exact same thing. There's strength in numbers. Let's come together. Let's do it together. And that's exactly what we did.
Essentially, it's more resources for law enforcement, more things that law enforcement can do by way of digging into colder cases.
Well, what I can tell you is that as I was working with Tara's family over the last few years, there are a few things that I learned. The first thing was that when families felt that their loved one's case needed a second, third, or fourth look, There was nowhere for them to turn. Also, though, I learned that law enforcement is so overwhelmed and burdened with the current crime that they are facing, and especially looking back the last few years, that it's really hard for them to even be able to stop and put a lot of time, money, resources into these cases that are 10, 20, or 30 years old. So really, we identified those as two key problems that needed to be addressed, and that's why we looked at the federal bill that had been passed, the Homicide Victims Families Rights Act of 2022, but that left families like Tara and Rhonda Sue Coleman's behind because it only addressed cases at the federal level. So we decided to bring that home here to the state of Georgia. And with its passage, we saw the creation of that cold case unit at the GBI, its funding as well with devoted staff. And I believe that really that advocacy, that legislation that was a culmination of, you know, not just me, right, but the families, this community, legislators like Houston Gaines on the right and Representative Stacey Evans on the left, everyone coming together to affect change on this. So it was a team effort, yes, but also I believe it's exactly why you and I are having this conversation today, because it allocated the time, person, power, money, and resources to look back at these cases that was so desperately needed.
Again, the fellow who's behind bars here, Edric Faust, his name, a bond hearing and bond denied in a pro forma fashion. I am sure the GBI going to have more to say later today about how this came to pass. I'm assuming you've mentioned advances in technology, and we frequently speak of that with DNA. I don't know, and we'll find out maybe or not. I don't know what we'll find out this afternoon, but I have to think that DNA had something to do with this, even in the case of my wife pointing out, well, he set the apartment on fire and destroyed a lot of evidence, obviously. I don't know to what extent DNA was even salvageable in that case, but just very broadly speaking, yeah, that DNA research 20 years ago has come about 20,000 miles from then in terms of what we can do with it.
Absolutely, and it's not just DNA. It's investigative techniques in general that have come a long way, and the way we look at these type of things. I mean, who would have thought that the police department or the GBI would be reaching out to a podcast of all things to ask questions? I mean, we've come a long way in what we believe investigations should look like in the 21st century, and I'm grateful for that. I think it's a really good thing.
Let me talk about the podcast for a quick moment here. Classic City Crime, your podcast. Okay. Sorry, this is a win for Classic City Crime, and folks are going to log on and listen in numbers that they weren't doing before. As you look around, and you must look at other people's work all over the country, there must be other success, quote-unquote, success stories that maybe some other podcaster in Kansas has helped solve a crime or something.
Well, there are, and there's actually one right here at home in Georgia. I mean, if you look down to Osceola, Georgia, Tara Grinstead. The teacher who was murdered, a podcast played a significant role in that. And again, I don't think it's that podcasters can necessarily take credit for solving the case. It is more so about raising awareness, putting on pressure, bringing people together in collaborative spirits to get things done. So I'll take credit for that, but I won't take credit for someone being behind bars because I think that's the work of law enforcement.
Again, Cameron Jay with us. I made this point on my social media. I'll make it again. And I had a conversation with Representative Gaines the other day. Okay, step one. And it's a huge step in finding a suspect. Step two, prosecuting that suspect. And we don't have time to go through the litany of challenges, and I'll use that word, challenges that we're going to face here with the district attorney's office. Your thoughts on the next step in this, prosecuting this case?
Yes, you're right. This is the first step toward justice for Tara and many. An arrest is certainly not the finish line. So the family has a lot ahead of them, too. What I can say is that I think Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said it best. The arc of the moral universe is long. Very long sometimes, but 23 years
trending,
in this case, but it bends
justice.
Always toward justice. Yeah. So, you know, I have faith in our criminal justice system. I believe that, you know, hopefully by the time that this case comes to court, not to get political, I do think we'll have a new district attorney in the circuit. But, you know, if and when, if there was a case before that, I certainly would hope that we would see a special prosecutor in the same sense that we saw in the Lake and Riley case.
And we're
case.
Seeing that in the Lake and Riley case, yes. That Deborah Gonzalez, the DA, effectively recused herself, bringing in someone else to prosecute that case. And we'll see where that goes. other cold cases. Here's one just down the road. Putnam County, Lake Oconee, the news of the last couple of weeks. Got some brand new DNA evidence that may or may not be a big piece of helping crack that case. The elderly couple, the couple that was killed in their home or near their home there on Lake Oconee County. Have you had an opportunity to look much at that one?
No, I have not. I really got so invested in Tara's case over the last few years in my relationship with her family.
So you become all Tara all the time.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a few others, of course, but it all has always led back to Tara's case and just wanting to see justice there. And Tim, I can honestly tell you, when I got the call last week, it was really shocking. When we were passing the Coleman-Baker Act, actually Ms. Baker, myself, so many people doing the advocacy looked at each other and said, well, this will probably never affect change in Tara's case, but it will affect change for other families throughout Georgia. So what a moment when actually her case became the first for them to solve. So we have 40 unsolved cases in Athens-Clarke County, 39 now, dating back to 1969. That's just Athens-Clarke County. We have
what kind of cases? We're not talking that many homicides.
Homicides that are unsolved, yes.
I know, because the one that we always think about in connection with Tara Baker a decade earlier, the Jennifer Stone case downtown.
Yes, and I think that what I hope this sends a message to those families that are waiting and hoping and believing for justice is that, you know, with the establishment of this new cold case unit and the work that they're doing, and I've met some of the members of that team, there's going to be more headlines like the one we saw last week. And that's a really good thing, not only for families, but for communities, because when you think about this, it is really the arrest of violent criminals, which is what we talk a lot about. You can't get much more violent than a homicide.
No.
So when we talk about looking back at these cases, we're really investing in bringing violent criminals to justice.
Again, Cameron Jay, Classic City Crime, the podcast. Tell folks where they can find that podcast.
Yeah, classiccitycrime.com on all major streaming platforms, and really appreciate you having me on today.
You gave me some numbers the last time, and I think it was this case we were discussing, I don't know, at some point last year. Frankly, I'm embarrassed because I got my own little effort, and you just, I mean, I don't know how these things stack up nationally. Maybe you do, but I mean, you got some stunning numbers on this thing. I mean, Athens is what it is, but you obviously are reaching beyond Athens to grab listeners.
Yep, it's based in Athens, Georgia, for listeners everywhere. That's what I've always said. But yeah, we're up to 1.3 million listens at this point. That's obviously growing over the last few days.
Sure.
But in full transparency, Tim, this is not about me. This is not about me being in the limelight either.
Okay,
so we took down.
You're going to say that, and I'm sorry, but it just doesn't exist but for you.
Well, I appreciate that. But we did actually take down a few episodes that were, you know, when we were looking back at these things, we were overturning rocks over the last 23 years. So some of those rocks involved looking at different folks that the police or the media might have looked at over the last 23 years, because I'm not worried about listen numbers and download numbers. We pulled those down because we want people to be focused on the person who is arrested now moving forward and new information that's coming out.
Great work, Cameron Jay. Classic City Crime Podcast. Congratulations to the extent that that's even an appropriate word to use on this. And thanks for shining the spotlight. And most of all, thanks for joining us this morning, Cameron Jay, Classics Today.